Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, Episode 59. It's just bad there. Recorded Tuesday, October 30th, 2012. Week 9 in the SEC is in the books, and SEC Sports Roundtable discusses all that is good and bad. Shane Bailey and Blair Smiley look at the injury on Lattimore, and is he returning next year? A BCS rundown, Heisman talks, the coaching changes on the horizon, and social media in football. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. No matter when you're listening to this, welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Have with me all the way across the city of Franklin, Blair Smiley. Welcome, Blair.
It's good to be back, Shane. Glad to be here.
I am so glad you're here. Otherwise, it'd be just me sitting in front of a computer with a webcam and a microphone looking like an idiot. So I appreciate you taking the time out to do this podcast. If you are stumbling upon this for the first time, it is SEC Sports Roundtable. We take a look every week at the games that happened last Saturday in the SEC. We take a look at what games are coming up this week that we think are of some importance, especially after you look at some of the games this week. You'll understand why I say that. Not to mention that, we'll look at any news or any type of information about the SEC that we want to talk about. And so it's mostly centered around the Southeastern Conference. Occasionally we'll have to throw some other teams in there just because of the BCS and the talk that goes on there and the implications inside the Southeastern Conference. I cannot speak this evening. But we do heavily weight our talk and conversation on football and basketball and the SEC. We're not afraid to tell you who we are fans of. Blair, if you're looking at his screen, actually has his Bulldog mascot up there. So pretty easy to see who Blair Smiley is out there rooting for. Myself, not so easy today, but you never know. I might throw a hint or two out there. Not a lot for me as a fan in football to be happy about right now. So we'll get right into the action, talk about some of the things that happened in last week's game, and we'll really just kick off talking about, I think the biggest news is the news coming from South Carolina this week, and that's Marcus Lattimore and the injury he took. I know South Carolina came out with a victory there, but that was definitely a victory without some consequences, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, what a devastating injury to arguably probably one of the better guys in all of college football, and I think you could see that with, you know, really the, you know, what happened that day. Shane, I don't think I've ever seen where both teams actually come onto the field, you know, and literally openly wept players from both sides. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, and I know that you, South Carolina being a topic with my brother-in-law going to school there, I get a lot of stuff and a lot of information about South Carolina because he's so passionate about it. Just like I inundate him with Mississippi State stuff that he cares nothing about. But obviously we like both of those things, but a lot of the stories about, you know, Marcus Lattimore and his fight to get back and just how great of a guy he was, all of the letters and emails and tweets to other players in the SEC that were going through injuries and those types of things is, you know, kind of positive notes that he gave them. Just a remarkable kid, and to see, you know, hopefully, you know, we're a couple of days removed from this, but, you know, that I've never really seen in a long time where it seemed like college football kind of stopped for a period of time that day, because it was obviously such devastating news, and just a horrific injury. I mean, just to be able to watch that and to see his face, I mean, you could kind of see it all over his face.
Yeah, no, I to watch it, and I know you said you saw it live, and I walked in, and all of a sudden I saw the staff tending to a player down, and I went, oh, no. You know, and my first reaction was I didn't see it live. The way everybody was huddled around, it's like, was it a back or neck injury?
Yeah.
You know, if you missed the actual play, that's the way they were treating that. But, you know, keeping him so still to get that knee back in place. But, you know, to sit there and then turn around and watch that replay of how it went down and the hit, I mean, that leg to me just – it was like jelly out there. And I'm surprised that the news is what it is. I was expecting much worse news. And, I mean, a dislocated knee and some torn ligaments, but nothing broke. You know, I think was yeah. did McGahee, Willis McGahee, when he was at Miami, he had a broken – he broke his leg, did
nah,
he not?
No, nah, he actually didn't. That was okay. That was the thing about it. This one is what they're saying is mostly towards what McGahee's was. So, you know, so it was – if you saw that injury, I mean, you know, that was a devastating a knee injury as we've probably seen. You know, the only thing I've ever seen any worse than that was, what was the guy that was the Oakland Raiders like in 94? I think I was like a senior in high school. McCauley or whatever his name was that literally got his whole leg. He tore his calf. He broke bones. He severed arteries, nerves, everything. He never played again. Yeah. That was probably the most horrific thing I've ever seen. But Lattimore's is what I thought was more in that line, and to hear the good news, which, you know, we can only say is good news.
Yeah, I mean, that, he's got a long road back. I mean, this is not going to be an easy injury to recover from, but, you know, there is a good chance that he might be able to see the field again. I mean, we are just like everyone else comparing this injury to Willis McGahee, but, you know, you look at that cat, he's had, 10 years in the league? Look what he did. I've got him on my fantasy team this year, so I kind of keep up with him. But he had a pretty good showing at Denver this week. So
yeah, you know, actually, I saw a stat, Shane, that he's had over 1,700 carries and like almost over 8,000 yards or something like that. So you know, in a pretty extended period of time. So that gives you a positive thing to come back. And Marcus Lattimore's kind of guy that he's going to give. You know, he's got the attitude, he's got the wherewithal to obviously be able and the character to kind of take a look at it, you know, and it's just the realization that you're talking about a guy that was literally the first off the board at running back and guaranteed in 6 months. And now you're talking about most likely missing all of next year and not returning until, you know, 2014.
And now all of a sudden, you know, I heard, and I can't remember who I was listening to today. It was somebody from that keeps up with South Carolina, one of the beat writers, I believe. But he was saying that there's also the possibility out there that he only sits out like the first, you know, three quarters of next year, comes back right about a year from now, and he's able to do that to basically showcase the fact that knee is still able to perform. And then he won't lose his draft status. And he never alluded to that, but that's what you kind of put together is, you know, instead of going out for another full – take that red shirt because he still has a red shirt year.
Yeah.
Instead of wasting a whole year out, you know, just come back next year, do that partial year, play some games toward the end of the season, help South Carolina out because they could always use him back there if he is healthy. That gets the scouts and everyone to see that the knee is in good shape and he is able to go play in the next level. And if that were the case, you don't see him dropping much as far as where he would go in his draft status. At least I wouldn't think. You know, that gets him closer, not as close as he could be this year, of course, but closer than a full redshirt because now you're looking 1 year out as opposed to two.
Right, and he's one of those guys, Shane, that, you know, the NFL has kind of moved away from that running back position from the standpoint of, you know, being that every down, you know, type of deal. So the idea, and I think that could be the case because, you know, it took him, you know, he got hurt in October of last year at Mississippi State. We were actually at that game, and, you know, he was just kind of coming into his own the last 3 weeks. You know, it was really a good year that he got back with just two ligaments. And so this one you think is going to have multiple surgeries. You think he's going to have more than one probably and then you don't know how they're going to react. You know, we got the same situation here where, you know, Kenny Britt for the Tennessee Titans here locally gets hurt last year and ends up having three surgeries. And so you never know how it's going to respond and those types of things. But that is an option to take a look at, that, you know, you get a year from now, and if he can come in the last four games and not waste another year and be able to show the potential, you know, that's just, you know, that's an option that definitely would be out there. But
yeah,
well, I think it's obviously pretty early, but that is a good observation.
Let's also talk about the game for a minute too. You know, South Carolina needed that win, and you know, they basically let Tennessee come back in it, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, and you always wonder how they're going to react after, you know, after something like that. And you know, it was, you know, I thought Tennessee played a good game. Tennessee played as about as well as they could have on offense. Again, their defense struggles. But to, you know, shut down, you know, really that defensive front and protect Bray the way they did for most of the game. And then obviously, you know, it's just the way that they have kind of, they're kind of snake bitten. And I think you saw the tweets and everything, you know, after that game, that it's just any possible way that UT could lose, they've lost it. And for Antonio Richardson to play as well as he played, and for that one play, you know, to Javaden on Clowney to get around him and, you know, hit Bray and fumble, and you know, that's basically the ball game. It's got to be a pretty frustrating from a Tennessee standpoint.
Yeah, because Bray threw what, four touchdowns and over 350 yards. So I mean, you know, from a standpoint that he had, I mean, he was effective. But now, you know, let's give it to Connor Shaw. He took some hits and still came back out and played, and he matched him pretty close. I mean, he was 350 yards and three touchdowns. So you know,
I mean, and Connor Shaw got back to what was making him good earlier in the year. He didn't make mistakes. You know, and if you listen to that broadcast, it was one of the things that Spurrier, you know, kind of frustrates him a little bit. It's, you know, when he calls a passing play, it's intended for you to pass, you know, not to, you know, tuck the ball away and run. So, but he didn't want to coach him so much that he eliminates his playmaking ability when it breaks down. So, you know, Connor Shaw, if he can find that balance, make, you know, positive, you know, choices there. You know, they are pretty tough to beat because he's a pretty heady kid.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at some of the box score statistics, and you actually realize that Shaw actually rushed for one. I forgot about that. So he had as many touchdowns as Bray. You know, so from that standpoint, they were neck and neck there. It came down to that last turnover that Clowney caused towards the end of that game that really was the difference maker in that game. The other, you know, there were other action in the SEC, but, you know, I'm not going to worry too much about the Missouri-UK game. I don't know why you're laughing. You know, Missouri beat Kentucky left and right with, you know, their backup quarterback. Kentucky's backup quarterbacks struggled again. You know, you wanted to see more from those folks, and it just – I'm sitting there watching on my iPad because, of course, it was an ESPNU game because nobody's going to show that game on where lots of people could watch that disaster.
Right.
And I had to turn it off. It was just so disheartening to see the same old Kentucky do the same old things and have the same old effect. And it's actually the same old in effect. It was very – very vanilla, and everything they tried just didn't work, and it's frustrating. And I know what was it? You given these stats out? Was it 33 freshmen have played so far on that, something like that?
Something crazy.
I mean,
it's the most in the SEC by far,
and it's probably one of the top 10 in all of bowl championship series football. You know, it's just hard to play in the SEC to have that many players being freshmen to be effective. And it's not, you know, you can have a few of those playmakers, but, you know, now we're starting to talk. When you talk 33 people, you're talking linemen, you're talking both linemen, both on the offense and the defense, And it takes a couple years just to get the size for those guys to become effective. Same thing with tight ends. I mean, you can't just bring in freshmen here. You see some running backs that have some success, sometimes a corner or a wide receiver. But some of those other positions, it takes a couple years to get that bulk to manage a 12-game season in the SEC. And Kentucky just hasn't had that luxury because everybody's been beat up and knocked down. So I feel bad being a Kentucky fan sometimes because of that. Another game that last week, I'm going to just give up on this picking thing because I did so well last year. I think it was about 70% against the spread, and this year I'm barely at 50%. You know, who would have thought? Did you pick Ole Miss over Arkansas?
No, I didn't. I thought Arkansas would come out and win that game. I thought they would cover. I didn't think it would be, you know, a blowout, but I didn't. I thought they'd win by 10 points, and I can't remember what the spread was. But
I think it was 7, 6 or 7.
Yeah.
I'm like you. I wasn't expecting Arkansas to put up what they did against Kentucky and win by, you know, 30 points or something like that. But I know that Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze is better, and I know that Arkansas is down, but – you know, the last couple of weeks you saw a different Arkansas program that you thought they had turned the corner and was starting to be competitive again. And I don't know what happened, why the wheels fell right back off, but they turn around and they lose to Ole Miss. And the Egg Bowl is starting to become more and more interesting of a game as we're getting closer because, you know, Ole Miss is actually fighting for a bowl spot now, aren't they?
Yeah, they got 5 wins.
So, and Do they have another non-conference? They do, I think. Hold on. Now, this week they've got Georgia. Who else?
No, they played every one of their non-conference the first 4 games. So they got Vanderbilt, I believe, still left.
That's right. Yep, you're right.
And then they've got Georgia.
Georgia this week.
They still got LSU.
So they're going to have a tough time to get to that 6th win, but they've got 4 games left to do it. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that would be our.
I mean, there's a good chance, Shane. I mean, you never know. I mean, I think the next, and this is what we've been saying with the West. You know, the next 2 weeks. I mean, November 10th, we're gonna have a clear picture of where we are in the West because this week and next week really eliminates that, and so. You're going to know where Mississippi State stands. You're going to know where Texas A&M stands. You're going to know where Alabama and LSU kind of fall out. And you're going to see if, you know, we roll into the Egg Bowl as a underdog. I mean, there's a possibility that can happen. So, you know, it's one of those things where Ole Miss is playing well, and it's, you know, it's pretty interesting, man. I mean, if, you know, I told this to my Ole Miss friend. I said, you know, Ole Miss looks a lot like Mississippi State in Dan Mullen's first year, except we had the toughest schedule in the country. And, you know, so we had tougher non-conference games. I mean, they got a Texas, which isn't that good in this year, but.
No, but Texas whooped them.
Yeah. And so we had a tough non-conference schedule that year, but, and then obviously missed the little, you know, missed LSU by, you know, half a yard from upsetting them in Starkville that year, but and finished the year 5-7. But you know, you get that up-tempo offense that creates excitement. It gets people talking. And Hugh Freeze's offense is just – it's full go, dude. There's no conservative whatsoever about it. And they should have beat Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Right. They gave that game away. So if you're an Ole Miss fan, you got to be thoroughly excited where you're at.
Ole Miss fans, I mean, you know, you talk to some too that they're excited about this program.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they would never dream to have a program to have 5 wins going into to have a chance with 4 games left to
right.
need to win one of those to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, and be honest with you, you're not going to have you're just not going to have Ole Miss losing 16 straight games in the SEC. I mean, that just they were down as low as they could possibly go. So they only had, you know, only way you can go up from 16 straight losses, dude, is up. And so all it takes is a little momentum and a little bit of belief. And So he's gotten everybody on board there. That's for sure.
So will you say that? And well, that's a great segue to this next one. Will you say Auburn's the Ole Miss of the SEC now?
They're a lot like Ole Miss was last year, where everything just fell off, and then it just went off the wagon. I mean, it just the wheels fell completely off. And
because they didn't just lose, they got destroyed by A&M.
You know, I saw a stat today that Alabama in 8 games has given up 65 points, and Auburn gave up 63 on Saturday. So, I mean, it's just freaking crazy, dude.
Maybe that's the real reason why Pat Dye didn't make Paul Feinbaum this week.
Well, the other thing, Shane, is that, you know, what escalates that even more is that you got Alabama in your state that's on its way to possibly a third. 3 out of 4 years national championship, and you've got the national championship on the other year. So it's just, man, it's bad there. And I mean, they're starting a true freshman this week, against New Mexico State, and it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, at least, and I was surprised. I mean, there's actually a line for that game. I thought that game would be off.
You know, hey, I got a question for you, Shane. I was thinking about this week. Would if you're Alabama and you go into LSU, now this is totally off topic and out of the deal, but
I like going off topic.
You go to LSU this weekend, you play a solid game, you come out of there with a win. You take care of Texas A&M the next week. So you're rolling in and you know you've got the West locked up and you're undefeated. Do you rest starters like last game of the season in the NFL and get them ready for the playoffs against Auburn? I mean, literally, they would be like – they're like right now a 35-point underdog.
All right,
line was set today.
If you were Tony Dungy, yes, and you would still be a 14-point favorite. But you're Nick Saban and you're not. I mean, if you look, A.J. McCarron's one injury away from – total destruction, and they've got him well into the fourth quarter in these games, and those games are at hand. Why risk them? I mean, even in the Mississippi State game, you guys didn't have any give up in you, but yet McCarron was still in there, and that game was really out of reach. So, you know, there's no way Saban's going to do that. Now, you might find out second half he might be more apt to pull some people if the game's at hand, like it has in many of the other games. But other than that,
I don't know if you've heard the hot rumor this today is that there's supposedly NCAA investigation going on in Auburn right now. So Chizik was asked about it today, and he basically said no comment. So
concerning what?
I don't know. I just saw a couple of things today, and it just kind of caught me by surprise. So there's a lot of stuff in Auburn. I mean, they're historically bad. Shane, I mean, historically.
Yeah, if you look at that program as a whole, this last couple, there's been some anomalies. It's the year they went undefeated and still didn't make the national championship because Reggie Bush bought him a championship over there in Southern Cal, mm-hmm. Or a house or whatever you want to say he got. So Auburn didn't get to go to the national championship game that year. The year they won, they bought a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at those two and take them out of the picture. For the last 20 years, Auburn really hasn't had a lot to talk about in the football world to be, you know, at least in the West. I mean, they have to be thankful for the most part that, Alabama is the way it was before Saban got there. Because that's the only thing that was keeping those guys, from just being – totally, I don't know what the record is in the Iron Bowl, but I know that Alabama's got to have a huge lead on that.
Yeah, it's just, right now it's they desperately need a win, and you think they're going to do that in New Mexico State. The problem is if you can't score points, you can't win ball games, and so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I'm glad I don't bet because I would be broke as bad as I do, but especially this year. But if you look at that, and I'll pull it up real quick for what we have on our pick'em page.
If I would remember to actually do mine before I missed the first two games.
Yeah.
Just done that twice this year.
Pulling it up as we speak. That game is... Da, da, da. You would think I could see it.
I think I saw a line of like 35. Alabama.
Auburn is getting 23. Is giving 23, excuse me.
Wow, that's a big... I saw one today that was minus 35, and I can't remember.
It went off, at least with our pick'em page that we have, at 22.5, and it moved to 23 today. But if you look at that, I mean, yeah, that's a pretty high number for Auburn. Like you said, they're not scoring.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're going to win. I don't know. I don't think they could. Who knows? I mean, they could be in such a free-for-all that they I guess they could lose that game. I mean, what were they favored against Monroe? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't even remember. Dude, they're not scoring 28 points.
What week was that? Do you remember when they?
Third week. Week three, because Arkansas was the second week.
They were 16.5 point favorites.
Wow.
So that week, and now they're giving 23 to New Mexico. I might have to go back and rethink that now that we've talked. You might have talked me into picking New Mexico State just because they might have a problem scoring.
Yeah.
23, much less covering that.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, another team that didn't have a problem covering, and we're not going to really talk a lot, we'll just mention them, is Vanderbilt, 49-7 over UMass, starting to get things, you know, they needed that. A Vanderbilt program needed a win like that to kind of build some confidence coming in.
It took a little bit to get them going. They started a little bit slower than you thought they would, but once they finally got it going, it rolled.
But, you know, they've got a tough couple weeks, too. I mean, like you said, they've got an Ole Miss program that they're going to have to win at. They've got Tennessee. And after the stuff that was said last week last year, excuse me, with Dooley and stuff, both of those teams are going to be fired up to play that game. They're going to have Kentucky. I'm not too worried about that for them.
And then they got Wake Forest.
And then they've got Wake Forest, so... And what's their record?
Four wins. Yeah, I think they're 4-4.
So they've got to have two of those four, and you know you would think Wake Forest and Kentucky are the two that they can get it from. You never know. Kentucky might play spoiler because you don't know what program that you're going to see from Kentucky. If you get the Kentucky that played Georgia, Vanderbilt won't win that game.
Right.
But you got to. You don't know what Kentucky you're going to see there.
I think the huge swing game for Ole Miss and Vandy is the winner of that game. I think, you know, if Ole Miss wins that game, then they maybe can assure them a 6-win. And then Vandy kind of the same way, you know. I mean, so I think Vandy's got an easier road than Ole Miss. You know, to be able to get to a bowl game 2 years in a row, Vanderbilt's going to have to they're going to have to write a big check come out of that, because there's going to be a lot of people after Franklin, I think, this year.
Maybe. I don't think he's performed as well as everybody thought he would.
Well, I think if you're a Vanderbilt dude and you go to a bowl game 2 years in a row when they haven't been to one since '84, before Bobby Johnson came there, that's good.
That's good, but you were expecting them – I mean, you were expecting them to have 7-8 wins this season.
No. That's what Chad Caldwell thought was going to happen, was 8 wins. There's no way, shape, or form that people were going – they're going to have 8 wins this year.
I'd like to go back and see what I said. I might have said 7.
Yeah, dude, if you get to a bowl game, that is legit, because the people you lost on defense as impact players, to be able to do it at Vanderbilt in your first 2 years is remarkable. And to be able to be recruiting at the level that you're recruiting, to piss off as many people as you pissed off. Fantastic job. If he gets to a bowl game, dude, in year two, back to back, man.
Well,
there'll be some people calling him.
Maybe you might be right. I've been wrong a lot this season, so it wouldn't it wouldn't surprise me at all. I guess that kind of rolls into the two other big games, and that was the big game in the East. Everybody had given Florida the East, and then Georgia decided that that wasn't going to happen. Largest cocktail outdoor cocktail party happened,
yeah, man.
And you know, Georgia has not, and we talked about this last week pretty much in depth, that Georgia has not had a good record there in Jacksonville, and that neutral field hasn't been kind to them. But they didn't let that distract them this year, and they came in there and did what they needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, for two teams, boy, they played sloppy, man. Was it 9 total turnovers between the two teams? Aaron Murray, you know, can't play well in a big game. He throws 3 picks in the first half when Georgia's got really control of the game, and Florida can't get anything going. You know, and then Murray ends up throwing the game-winning touchdown. And, you know, Jarvis Jones basically just manhandles everybody.
And I was getting ready to interject there and say just that we talk about how sloppy an offense looks. But sometimes an offense is sloppy because the defense that they're up against is that good.
Yeah.
And you had two stellar defenses. I mean, Florida's program I've, again, been wrong all season long. I didn't think they were going to be near what they are. But they have a tremendous defense. Muschamp's done an awesome job down there with that defense. And Georgia, I mean, that's what – yes, they have Murray and some weapons there and just insert running back, it seems like, down there in that program. But their defense is what – they've been able to hang their hat on. And so sometimes plays happen on the offensive side that are negative because the defense is that good. And I think some of that was what happened in the first half. And I think that you saw Rick, and I think you saw Muschamp do what Muschamp has done all season long, and that's make adjustments in the second half.
Yeah.
Except Georgia was able to make a few more better their calls were just a little better. Otherwise, it could have went Florida's way as well.
Yeah, I mean, Jarvis Jones, when he plays like he plays on Friday, I mean, he just takes over a game. And, you know, I mean, he just wreaked havoc, and Georgia's defense showed up. I mean, they had been gutted, dude, 2 weeks in a row for over, you know, 200 yards rushing. And, you know, between their bye weeks and the Kentucky game. And so, you know, that safety Sean Williams or whatever his name was had – called out some of the players on the team. And, you know, when you get into that game, man, it's a big-time rivalry game. It was a big game, and Georgia came to play. When Mark Rick gets fired up so much that he's yelling at refs, you know that it's a pretty big game and it's pretty high.
Yeah, so now Georgia holds their own destiny in their hands.
And they've got a piece of cake. Ole Miss and Auburn, they've got all their East taken care of.
Yeah.
So they, you know, and then they get their Georgia Tech, which they'll beat the dog out of them. So
that's three. What's their other game left?
I think it's – they may have a small, like, somebody you never heard of game. I think they play somebody this week No, they play Ole Miss this week.
I'm pulling it up.
Yeah, they probably got some. I think they got a non-conference.
They got Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
So
a tough one.
Yeah, you got Georgia Tech and Georgia Southern, Ole Miss and Auburn. Is that right?
Yep.
So, you know, if like you said, from an easy standpoint, that's where it stands to be their best play. And help me out. Do you know the tie-breaking rules for the how that works? Does it goes SEC?
It goes head to head if you just got two teams. It's the only way that it gets a little bit squirrely.
All right. What happens if you have three teams?
Three teams.
But it goes with conference record first.
I can't remember. There's all, it gets a little bit squirrely when you have three teams.
Because that's where you've got to look at, to me. I mean, if you want to look at this and look out the rest of the season, what you might have. I mean, you've got South Carolina sitting there with two losses, right?
Yeah, but I mean, Florida and Georgia, I mean, that's basically it. I mean,
well,
Georgia.
Just hear me out.
All right.
Florida State can beat Florida.
But it doesn't matter.
Okay, that was my question. So,
it's SEC.
So SEC record does count first. So
Yeah, that's for who goes to the East. Yeah, it's only SEC record. It doesn't matter what your overall record is.
All right. That's what I thought, but then when you said you couldn't remember, it's like, well then that opens up a whole other.
I couldn't remember if it's like division teams or if it's your record against the SEC West. Or is it, because when you get three teams, it's not any head-to-head stuff. It's really squirrely on how it works out. It totally changes. But obviously head-to-head.
Well, it's like your record against the opponents that you played head-to-head or something.
Right. Yeah. So it's pretty crazy.
But, well, South Carolina is going to be out with two losses. Florida, who else do they have left in their SEC schedule?
They are actually playing Missouri. And then who is they've already played LSU on the West. Who's their other West that they played? They already played.
I'm looking it up. Sorry, we should know this as much as we talk about it. But they've got Jacksonville State, and they've got Florida State. That's their last two games.
Then they've got Missouri this week.
And that's it. Then they're done because then they have University of Louisiana Lafayette.
So they've got
three non-conference games in a row to end the season. That's weird.
Wow. Yeah, it is. Well, that schedule is all jacked up this year and next year. So,
this week's really their only other opportunity to lose a game in the SEC.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, I don't think they'll have
Missouri's that. I think Missouri's getting on much of a fight.
Yeah. So that means that that for Georgia to lose the East now, they would have to lose to Ole Miss or
Auburn.
And if they do that, they deserve to not play in the SEC championship game. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see Florida play there because the more and more I watch them play, because I am so wrong at how good I thought they are, I just don't like seeing them win now.
I understand.
And I guess the last game, there was one other game this week. Blair, you want to talk about that one?
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, all right, tell me this. Did anybody think Mississippi State was going to win?
No.
All right. Well,
let me ask you this. Did you think that it was going to be a closer game than that?
Well, I mean, after the first 8 minutes when they went 14
That's not what. Before the game started, did you think it was going to be a closer game than that?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did. I didn't. I mean, the absolute worst possible start that you could ever have against Alabama State had it in the first 9 minutes of the ball game. And that's what Alabama does. It's, and you can tell. It's pretty funny listening to the guys after the game because you have Cam Lawrence and Jonathan Banks, who are four-year starters. Jonathan Banks, gets beat on a 57-yard touchdown pass where basically he was undercutting the route thinking that he had a safety over the top and realized 10 yards into it he didn't have a safety over the top. And so they obviously miss calls and you give them 14 points, you – get a field goal block after, your first drive that was a successful drive, get into the red zone. And, they exposed our tackles a little bit. But I'll tell you the thing that I learned about Alabama in this game was, number one, I knew it was over after 8 minutes. When they went up 14-0, I knew you weren't just going to score 21 points on them. I mean, we knew that going into the game. And you could tell that Mississippi State looked at and scouted them and said they run the ball 69% of the time and they're going to come out and try to run it down our throat because they're probably not going to try to throw it on us. and that's exactly opposite of what Saban did. But it's amazing, and I thought, what's the commentator that does ESPN, Brad Nessler and Todd Blackledge. Yeah. I thought they did a very good job, because the thing that when I was watching Alabama that I found out, you know, how do you lose five defensive players in the first 35 picks of the NFL draft and you're better? And it's funny because they're not individually any better. Like those five individuals that are replacing those five players, the Dante Hightowers and all those guys, they're not better individually, but they're creating more turnovers than the team did last year. They're stopping, they're basically playing better defense from a numbers standpoint than the team did last year. And then they've got an offense that has the best offensive line, has a quarterback that will not make a mistake. He just won't throw it. And they got a running game between Eddie Lacy, who is 240 pounds, and then this Yeldon. He had 8 yards a carry, dude. He rushed the ball 10 times for 85 yards. I mean, it was unbelievable because their offense plays so well with their defense and vice versa that they are a better football team than they were last year. And it's awful. And to be honest with you, in all the teams that Saban had, the team that lost three games and didn't win the national championship 2 years
most
ago
talented.
It was the best team he actually had. Yeah. And so it's just amazing to just look at what they've got. And just, I know that the crazy thing about it is Mississippi State's got a good offense. I mean, if you give Tyler Russell time, he's going to play well. I mean, he did it on that 16-play. I mean, when do you have an 8-minute 16-play drive that goes 98 yards and you get 0 points out of it? And that's what we've done all 4 years against Alabama. We got more blocked field goals. We've gotten inside the red zone more than, we've probably gotten in the red zone 8 times and come away with no points. And it's just, you can't do that against Alabama. I mean, so that was frustrating because I thought it was going to be a better show. But I think it's something that, Mississippi State hadn't lost in like 350 days. They've won 9 in a row, counting the last 2 games of last year. And so kind of getting their teeth kicked in their mouth is, I think in hindsight, I was like, let's just get our freaking heads drilled in our ground so they won't, they won't be jumping up down thinking they're, some big hot shots.
Inflated egos there now is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I don't really think it was that. I mean, Jonathan Banks sits out after the game and says that, Alabama is the best team I've ever played against in college. And Cam Lawrence says, it's absolutely the worst time to ever play your worst as a defense in the first half. I mean, the very first half is the worst they played all year. And if you do that against Alabama, boy, you get exposed quick. And if you see what happened when they figured out and they settled in after kind of getting knocked their teeth in from 9 minutes to go in the second quarter till 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter when they actually scored, before they finally scored that touchdown, they gave up 3 points in almost 2 full quarters. They settled in and figured out, how to play them, but it was too late. I mean, you got 21 points on the board, you're done.
The damage was done.
And, and then the last bit, the last two scores, they got their backup quarterback in. We got freaking 4 true freshmen on the defensive line. It was total.
So you were like Kentucky every day.
It was. I mean, we literally in the last quarter, Mullen, I thought, did a great job in, saying, hey, let's get them out here and get them some feel because you're just going to have to take your lumps tonight. I just came away from it. I wasn't sold on Alabama because I didn't think that they had played anybody. And most people say they hadn't played anybody because Mississippi State hadn't played anybody. But, we'll find out this week on Mississippi State. I mean, this is the swing game where you're going to find out who Mississippi State is, and they got to be able to bounce back. And
Yeah, you look at this week's games. We'll kind of go through most of them pretty quick because Vandy at UK, we've kind of already talked about what Vanderbilt needs to do. They've got to win two of the next four. So this is probably one of the must wins because they're not going to win all four of these. They're not going to win. There's a good chance that they might not win all three of the four games that we've already talked about. So this is one of their must win games. Good news for Kentucky is it's at Lexington. So hopefully, you know, the fans will come out thinking that there's at least a chance that they can win that game. Troy is at UT. Not much to talk about there. I think there's another win on UT's roster there finally.
I'd be interested to see how they play. Troy is a better team than people think. They've got a very experienced quarterback. I know this because I watched them this year when they played Mississippi State. Mississippi State struggled, but they played at Troy. But Troy's got they got an offense that can move the ball. And if you know Tennessee, they've got that little junk offense they've been running there for a decade, that just that quick hit spread stuff that Tennessee struggles with. So got to see how they respond, you know, with less than 70,000 people in Neyland Stadium.
Did you say less than 70,000?
Yeah.
You're thinking that it's going to be 30% empty?
They had less than 80 the last non-conference game. So I would think after last week's loss, I think they're going to kind of show their stands there.
This is a week. I mean, if you look at it, the majority of the teams really are playing non-conference games because the next two we're just going to talk about is Tulsa at Arkansas. As bad as Arkansas is this year, hopefully they can pull off a win there. And we've already talked about New Mexico State at Auburn. So three games are non-conference games this week.
Yeah.
And then you've got Ole Miss at Georgia. We've already talked about what needs to happen there. Georgia controls its own destiny. Ole Miss has a couple of wins still needed to get to be bowl eligible, and this week's not it. And then you've got, you know, Missouri and Florida. I just don't know what Missouri has yet.
Yeah.
You look at them one week and they look like they're okay. The next week they don't. They've not been impressive. Franklin's still not back. It looks like he's close. I mean, he was at the Kentucky game. Their quarterback, the Missouri's quarterback, was so ineffective that even though he wasn't 100%, they could bring him in if they needed to. So he actually warmed up on the sidelines. So, you know, I think Missouri is a different team with Franklin behind the helm at quarterback, but I don't know if it'll be enough. I don't think it'll be enough to beat Florida.
Yeah, they're struggling in the SEC this year.
Yeah.
And
Florida's defense is just that good.
It doesn't help when your best player is on the sidelines too. So
yeah. And then the last two games we'll spend a few minutes talking about, and we've already alluded to it, and that's the A&M at State. It's a huge game for both of those programs.
Yeah, it's a big game. It's a Snow Bowl 12, buddy. You're going to like this, Shane, another Scott Strickland genius move.
The marketing guru of Strickland. He's got a job in advertising when he gets done being in football.
He actually got a tweet today that they are we put the permanent hashtag Hell State as the end zone on the north end, which, you know, we did that last year for the Egg Bowl, which was the first time it was done on a college football field. And this year we actually have done it permanently. Well, this year, or for this game, it's actually going to be hashtag Snowball 12, which has been the hashtag for the celebration of the last two times these teams met, which was the 43-41 overtime game that has been dubbed the Snowball because it was a freak snowstorm in Shreveport, Louisiana, of all places. So they're commemorating that team and all that kind of stuff and wearing the special uniforms this weekend. And so,
and they're white, you know, all white, aren't they?
All white.
Is it gold or the lettering?
Nah, the gold will be for the Egg Bowl. This will be all silver numbers.
That's it. It's like a silvery shadowish looking.
Yeah. And then they'll actually have white helmets with a silver face mask and a silver outline of a dog.
That's what it is.
On it. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, it's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be 11 a.m. kick, and I'm going to the game. I'm excited. I'm really excited to see Johnny Manziel. You know, I think, you know, State has struggled with a quarterback like this. Traditionally, we've never really done well with a running mobile type quarterback. So I'm hoping that, you know, you know, obviously he didn't do this against Auburn, but Texas A&M had struggled before they went to Auburn on the road. I mean, they turned the ball over six times at Ole Miss. They were up 27-0 on La Tech in Shreveport at the Independence Bowl Stadium there, and ended up having that shootout and barely winning. And then, of course, they went to Auburn and just ran all over them. So I'm hoping the away A&M Aggies show up and he has a couple of turnovers. But I think that the thing with him is trying to figure out a way to keep him in the pocket.
Yeah, because he's just as dangerous when he's outside the pocket as inside the pocket.
I think you got to be so disciplined. You got to keep him inside the pocket and then, you know, make him throw. And I think Slay and Banks, and I think our secondary is, I think they're a little embarrassed because of the couple of breakdowns that they had, because they were the strength of our defense. And against Alabama, they were really the reason that we gave up 14 points in the first 8 minutes. And I think they've kind of taken it as a personal challenge to make some. So I think it's going to be a lively atmosphere. I'm looking forward to it. So
now, didn't you say
a game for both guys?
Now, didn't you say a few weeks ago that the helmet was designed by a fan?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that's
A fan that actually had sent it in, and they actually took his model and sent it off and you know, used it, and they actually referenced him in the release. So it's pretty cool. So the fan got all the credit for it. So that's part of Strickland's kind of MO. He's very fan friendly from that standpoint, and yeah, very active from that social media thing. I mean, if you saw the We Believe campaign that went on last week with regards to We Believe We Can Go and Beat Alabama, and that went to hell in a handbasket real quick. But you know, it's pretty interesting to see that fan base and how social media actually works with it.
Yeah, he does a great job engaging his fan base over there. Yeah. And the marketing that State does, I might just be more aware of it because you're always able to tell me about it, but it's definitely different than some of the other programs in the SEC. I'll use, on an aside, the Vanderbilt program. You know, they're continuing. Have you noticed the ads here in Nashville? They're continuing the same – a change is coming in basketball. Of course it is. They don't have a team this year in basketball. I mean, everybody's gone. Of course it's going to be a change. And it's not a good change at Vanderbilt. I have no idea why they decided to keep that marketing and throw that out there, because anybody with half a brain understands that Vanderbilt's got a whole new team that's going to be out there, and there's a good chance they're not going to be that good.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Shane, when you say that about social media. I actually saw – you know, this week, you know, you think of Mississippi and you don't think of, hey, they're, you know, innovative with social network. You know, they basically don't have shoes and running water, but, you know, it's kind of the whole
joke. But they get the Twitter.
But it's funny because Strickland is, he's the third most followed AD in the country. And the media relations guy, which is Joe Galbraith, who is an excellent follow if you're a State fan, because he is, I mean, he's got all the stats and all the stuff, and it's just a great, he uses Twitter so well. He's the same thing as Chuck Dunlap is for the SEC.
That's Chuck, if someone's still listening to this podcast and they're on Twitter, he is a must follow too.
The great thing about it is he has a little over 14,000 followers.
Are you talking about Chuck or
Chuck? Yeah. Chuck, who actually is basically the media relations for all of the all 14 schools for the SEC. Mississippi State's media director has over 8,000 followers. So you can actually see the same guy for Ole Miss has a little over 2,500. So you can actually see how the fan base is really, they have really taken towards this social media, and it's really how the university, you know, is the way that they first respond to everything, and how interactive they are with regards to it. It's pretty interesting because I think it's a little bit unique, being that it's Mississippi State and nobody would ever think of it that way. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things, but I just find it interesting.
All right. Well, let's go on to the last game that we haven't talked about, and I guess we're saving the best for last, maybe.
Yes.
Does LSU have a chance? That's the question I'll throw out there.
Yes. They have a chance because it's in Death Valley. They have a chance because defensively they are just as dangerous from a defensive front, if not more dangerous from a defensive front standpoint, with Sam Montgomery and just went blank on the Mingo on the ends. But LSU, and the other thing is you've got Les Miles. Les Miles is 3-3 against Nick Saban. And they're 3-3 in the last six games. And Alabama's 2-4 in the last six games at Baton Rouge. So I just watched Alabama dominate. But LSU, number one, has way more talent than Mississippi State has, especially from a defensive standpoint. The thing that, and Shane, I think you can figure this out, if you watched, you didn't watch the game like I would have probably watched it, but once you get down 21-0, it's like, hey, let's get some positives out of this thing. And when I watched Mississippi State, the only way that you actually got to Alabama was that you had to make them negative or no gains in their first or second down. If they stayed ahead of the chains, they're basically impossible to stop. Our offensive line's too dominant. If they get in 3rd and 3, you're screwed. But if they get 3rd and 8, they're not as efficient. And Alabama and LSU has the ability to get negative plays on those first couple of downs. And I think they can I think they can hang with them. Now, I think the game's going to be a lot closer than people are going to say it's going to be.
So it's going to be like round one last year, was it? 10-6, 10-7?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I think
9-6. What was the final?
I think the last year was 9-6. Yeah. I think it's going to be more. I think it's going to be more in the range of, you know, a 17-10 game, you know, something like that. I think Alabama's going to win by like a touchdown. I don't think they're going to win by 20 or 14 or whatever. I think it's going to be a closer game than what people think, but LSU's got to get something creative on offense if they start getting stagnant. But, I mean, you got to remember, LSU's been waiting on this, dude. I mean, they got embarrassed. They're going to get their best shot. And from a defensive standpoint, I think at some point, McCarron's is going to throw a pick. I mean, he basically threw a pick the other night, and Darius Slay dropped the daggum thing.
That's where I was going with this whole thing, and I think you alluded to it. Was he got 260 pass attempts or something ridiculous like that without an interception?
He doesn't have an interception since Cam Lawrence intercepted him last year at Mississippi State.
All right, so with that being said, it's like Vegas. Sooner or later, you're going to lose.
Yeah, you got to.
And sooner or later, you're going to throw a pick. And so at what point does that happen? And at what point on the field does that happen? Because I feel like LSU is going to be opportunistic, and they're going to come away with a few plays that's going to turn the tide on this game. No pun intended there, and can have the upset win. But it's going to take exactly that. It's going to have to take McCarron having a mistake or two. And it might be a freak mistake where it hits the guy's hands, hits a receiver's hands, and gets popped up. LSU's there, picks it up, and runs it back for 6. In the stat book, it's going to show an interception for McCarron, but that doesn't mean that he caused that interception.
I think you're right. I think also the other thing is that I think Alabama, and I think this is the genius, it's the process that Nick Saban talks about and everybody talks about, is that every week but I think that they actually, you know, I mean, you can tell by what they did to Mississippi State. You know, I think Mississippi State being 7-0 going into last week actually hurt them because it made Alabama go, well, we can't look past this Mississippi State team. They always play pretty tough anyway, but now they're 7-0. They're going to come in here high flying, and we got to basically be physical all week and be ready to play. And they put together a game plan, so you could tell that they were focused on that game. And so LSU having that bye week, they've got the ability to make a negative play. I don't think LSU's going to win the game, but I could see it maybe being a 21-13 game or a 17-10, something like that. But I think there's going to be a mistake.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say LSU is going to win.
Nice.
And it's going to it's going to have to take some of what I've already said.
I want LSU to win, so Mississippi State can come in the next week and possibly upset them.
If those things happen, LSU can win. If it doesn't, it's going to be a repeat of the national championship game last year, and LSU's going to run all over. I mean, Alabama's going to run all over LSU. So it's going to go one of those two ways. We're going to know Saturday which way, if I was right or just completely off in left field again. But that kind of looks at what we have for last week's games and this week's games and how all that parlays into bowl championships. And, you know, there's seven teams in week eight still in the top 20 in the BCS from the SEC. You know, that's some pretty amazing statistics. And I'll kind of wrap this up with one. I think I have just one other thing that I didn't cover. Let me see. No, I've got two more items that I wanted to discuss before we ended up. And I'll talk about McCarron since we were just finished up with Alabama. Is the fact that he's in the SEC hurting his chances at a Heisman Trophy?
I don't think the fact that he's in the SEC, I think the fact that right now it's hurting him because he's at Alabama and everybody expects him to win, and they think that, you know, he's kind of still got that game because he's not putting up 350 a week, you know, and he's not, you know, he doesn't have 28 touchdowns in four picks. He's got 16 touchdowns or now 18 touchdowns and zero picks. And he's throwing about 225 yards a game doing it. I think where it'll really get, because there's really not a contender, and this whole Notre Dame mate Tao or whatever his name is, the linebacker.
I know who you're talking about.
Absolutely no way that dude needs to be in the top three of the Heisman race. If he is in the top three, Jarvis Jones needs to be in the top three. Because if he is playing in the SEC, he is just a regular old dude in the SEC. That's just another thing. But that's off topic. But McCarron, I think, Shane, to answer your question, this week, if he has a good game, if you see him go throw for, you know, 275 yards against LSU with two picks with two touchdowns. Or three touchdowns and no interceptions, and they win by 10 points, I think it jumps him definitely into the conversation, because that basically guarantees them into the SEC championship and into the national championship race, where it's just going to obviously get him into that role. He's the most efficient quarterback right now. And, you know, after watching him Saturday night, I mean, he is not a game manager by any shape. He's a playmaker.
I think there needs to be more talk of him. I mean, if you look at him, he's the number one rated pass as far as passer efficiency.
Oh yeah.
In college football, or at least Division I bowl championship, BCS, however you want to describe that top echelon, a group of 120 some odd schools, he's got the number one passing efficiency. He might not have the most yards, but, you know, that's a huge stat when you're this far into the into the season and still have that, and have a program that's undefeated, number one in their conference, number one in the country in every single poll, every way you slice it and dice it. I think because he's playing for Alabama and because they're in the SEC, I do think that both of those things are hurting his chances right now. And it's going to take some shake up there at the top. You know, Kansas State stumbles and loses. It doesn't seem likely right now. That team's legit. But if that were to happen, that could really hurt Klein's chances and help McCarron if he can come away with it. But it might all be for naught, since I've chosen LSU to beat Alabama this week anyways.
I understand.
Next question I'm going to throw out to you, and then we're going to wrap this little puppy up. How many coaches are gone next year?
And that's tough. You know Arkansas, so you know that they're already out looking for another coach.
Yeah, they basically said we're already talking to coaches that are playing or coaching right now.
You know, I mean, at first glance, you go, all right, I'm going to say four. I think Gene Chizik, I don't think there's a choice. I think you got to get rid of him. just because of the historically disaster that it's become. I think there's going to be no choice, and I think Auburn's not going to be patient enough.
I don't think the boosters have given it much of a chance to be patient there. I mean,
and then I don't really think Derek Dooley is going to get his shot at South Carolina. I mean, at Tennessee. But I think there are some serious questions there with regards to budget and, you know, finances and all that kind of stuff.
It helps to be an attorney and do your own contracts, does it not?
It does.
Not only, if I remember correctly, what I've read, not only is he taken care of, but almost every assistant coach on that program has some sort of similar structured buyout where UT's on the hook for a big portion of their salary if they don't get another job.
Yeah, and see, they knew that last year because when you have to hire assistants, you go into Derek Dooley's third year, which is he's on the hot seat. Those guys aren't coming unless they get multi-year contracts.
Yeah. So they needed the security to get there.
Yeah. So with the $5 million buyout plus the assistants, it's somewhere right shy of $10 million that you'd be paying in buyouts. But
And what's Chizik's? Chizik's is what, seven?
His is seven and a half. You'll be paying $10 million, $11 million with all the assistants as well.
So both of those are going to be on par, UT and Auburn.
You know, and I just don't think, because I think the thing that hurts Chizik is that you could go, well, we just need to cut everybody on the staff and let me just, you know, basically cut everybody and fall on the sword type of deal. But he just did that. I mean, he's got a new defensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator who supposedly isn't gelling very well, obviously, with their offensive performance. So I don't see how he survives. And so I think he got those three. And then, you know, what is Kentucky going to do? So it's going to be tough. I mean, I could see a scenario where Dooley gets a fourth year. I could see a scenario where he doesn't. So I'm going to go three. I don't know if Kentucky's going to fire Joker.
I mean, I like Joker. I really do. I think he's gotten a raw deal. I think the fans up there are just smoking something that they're growing up there, or they're into the meth labs. I don't know what their deal is, but I mean, the program has a lot of strengths in it, and I don't know why there's such an uproar for a change there. I don't think that you're going to bring somebody in that's going to do any better than what he's brought in. I mean, right. You look at the recruiting classes he has. He's got a lot of talent there, a lot of things to look forward to. And what you're going to see is you're going to see somebody come in, take a program that's got a bunch of players that had a ton of experience from this year and probably compete for another bowl game next year. And they're going to do that all with Joker Phillips's guys and players. And the good news for me, at least, as a Joker fan, is that the athletic department seems to be on the same kilt as I am with this and be on Joker's side and not wanting to make a change. I think they like what he has to do with the program, where he's got them. They just don't like the attendance. And it might come down to simple economics, the boosters and the fans not showing up in the seats. They speak very loud at any stadium. But it only takes, you know, a couple of wins next year, and those fans will return, even if Joker's there and they weren't happy at the beginning. Winning cures a lot of bad things.
I saw a stat today that Nick Saban, after 4 years at Michigan State, before he went to LSU, or before he actually had a string of success at Michigan State, but after his first 4 years, he was 25-22-2. So even Nick Saban, who is – you know, with the national championship this year, will seriously put himself in the conversation of, you know, the conversation of greatest college football coach of all time, obviously in this modern era of the BCS era. But, I mean, for him to go in his first job, 25-22-2 in the Big Ten, at a place like Michigan State, the problem is that, you know, if you got a $5 million buyout, then, you know, it's just just kind of the way it is, you know.
And, I mean, Kentucky's isn't near that high. I think it's like 3.25, 3.5 for Joker. Yeah. So, I mean, it's in comparison to some of these other guys we've been talking about, it's a much smaller number. But even then, you know, he's got a few million dollars waiting on him if they switch coaches. And
yeah, I think the problem that you have to weigh is, number one, is you have to make the decision. I think the thing that's got Dooley in trouble is that Dave Hart isn't the guy that hired him. And then, you know, and he's got full, he's got full control over this deal. And so,
with Dooley gone, it's pretty much a whole new era, right? Because Hart brought in Martin, right? Basketball coach?
No.
No, was he?
No. He was a Mike Hamilton hire.
He was Hamilton's last hire then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's going to turn out to be, Hamilton also hired Bruce Pearl. So he had a couple of stints. I think Konzo Martin's going to prove to be a good coach.
He had those guys working hard last year. They were the latter half of that program. And we'll start talking more basketball here probably in the next few weeks now that, you know, they're starting to do some preseason games. So,
you know, an interesting name I heard, Shane, and all the rumor mill or whatever, was obviously Tennessee. That the big rumor mill is the John Gruden, if they fire Derek Dooley. But one of the names that they basically had said that would be, they would reach out. That would be the first contact, obviously. But after that names of Bobby Petrino, you know, the regular ones. But I found a name that I thought was pretty interesting. Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State was a name in there that I would have never really registered. But, you know, as Oklahoma State that has a T. Boone Pickens, you know, $200 million facility place, is that a better job than coming to Tennessee and taking over a top 20, top 15 program with all the facilities and be able to bring that offense? And so pretty interesting. I thought that was an intriguing name that was dropped, and he's spent that time at Oklahoma State, so it'd be interesting. So
I like that one better than some of the others. I don't see Gruden coming to the college ranks.
Yeah.
I think he's happy doing what he's doing right now. Wait, now,
because Mike Gundy's a man and he's 40. Anyway.
Now, he wasn't with Oklahoma State when he said that, was he?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
All right. I don't know. I don't see Gruden. I don't see Tennessee with Petrino, but who knows? I mean, people want wins, and character means nothing at that point. I mean,
yeah.
It's seen here every year, it seems like, in the SEC. So
I still think the Petrino thing is going to be a very difficult hire, just because of the HR fiasco that happened at Arkansas. I think for fans hiring him, it's not a big deal. I think putting your name to that hire as an AD, it's a more difficult deal.
Okay. So he needs another year or two to wait that out, so to speak.
I would think, but I don't know.
And you're not even see him. You're not, at least not any sports stations or talk radio that I listen to. I don't even hear him making any type of appearances. I mean, you look at.
Yeah, he's in a hole.
Yeah, I mean, he's buried deep. I mean, you look at, is it Leach? That was at Texas Tech?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he got off and he went over to Sirius XM with one of those guys, Packard or Jackaroot, that's who it was.
Yeah.
You know, on Jackaroot's show, now Rick Neuheisel's over there, you know, basically, you know, talking it up just so that they're able to stay relevant in these conversations. Petrino's not been heard from.
Yeah.
And so I'm with you. I don't think that's too likely, but I'm sad to say I think there's going to be four and coaches gone in the SEC. So, well, we've come to the end of this roundtable. Over the next few weeks, what we're going to try to do is maybe have a couple of extra podcasts if we can get the staff or get the folks in here to talk for it. That way we can do a little basketball on the side here as we start ramping up to basketball season. I know we've got a few basketball fans that we line up that have hosted here with us in the past. So maybe reach out to those guys and might see an extra podcast or two between now and the end of the year that's going to be just strictly basketball related. So might get to see a double dose of us as we move forward into basketball season. But it is that round table or open mic period of the podcast, Blair. It was nice to see you actually tweet. It took some ribbing from one of the other co-hosts that might be an Alabama fan to get you active on Twitter. But you know, you were lighting it up there for about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I just hate Alabama with a passion. I got a couple of them out there. I was testing it out, seeing how it was working. So we'll see how it goes from here.
Glad to have you out there. Anything you want to throw out there on the open mic?
No, man. I'm just looking forward to Halloween tomorrow. Taking the little guy. We're meeting up with you guys, I think.
I believe so.
And got the little man in Spider-Man, so he's all fired up. And then heading to take in a little Texas A&M Mississippi State game this weekend. So I'm excited about that. And Bennett's going to that. So my parents will be excited to get their only grandchild at the tailgate party. So yeah, it'll be fun. I'll have me some brewmoses about 7 a.m. So I'll be thinking of you.
I will be up at 7 a.m., but no brewmoses in my system Saturday. I know I have leaves I need to rake, but they'll still be there. That's the way I look at those. It is Halloween tomorrow, so hopefully this podcast will be out on Halloween. That's going to be my goal, is to get this out for you guys tomorrow. So, yeah, I'm taking my little ones out. Going to be Jesse and Woody from Toy Story. Nice. So
awesome.
You know, they're at an age where you can kind of lead them, I guess, to a certain way, but really didn't even have to. They both chose those, I think, somewhat independently on their own, and so you know, I think my wife's tickled to death that you're able to get them in some sort of a coordinating outfits.
Exactly.
You know, so that's a win for her. And
it was awesome, man, because it's amazing the difference. You know, we've been at almost turning three, the difference between last year and this year. You know, just last year, just completely unaware of what's going on. And this year, just totally fired up about it and wanting to pick out his own outfit and that type of stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's Dad's going to get hopefully some good candy to hide from the kiddos. Come Wednesday night late. So with that, guys, thank you so much for listening in. If you want to find ways to listen or interact with this podcast, please do so. We are on YouTube. We do a Google Hangout when we do the podcast. So for people to go out there and watch, they can actually watch this when we record live. We record live generally Tuesday or Wednesday nights is generally the record times. So be on the lookout for that. Be happy to tweet that out. We are on Twitter at SECSRT, as well as on Facebook at SECSRT. The YouTube channel, same thing, SECSRT. Lots of traction out there the last couple months on the YouTube channel. So people are out there kind of subscribing, liking, watching what we're doing, listening. Surprised at that they want to sit and watch two guys with webcams basically talk SEC sports, but that might be the easiest way for them to get this information. So that's the reason we do it. We want to get the information out in as many ways possible. Of course, we're always on iTunes. Just if you do a search for SEC sports, last time I checked, we were the number one listed podcast under SEC sports. So kudos to all you guys out there downloading and listening to this podcast. It wouldn't be that way if it wasn't for you folks. So thank you so much for doing that. And on Stitcher Radio, we're in the top 25% of all podcasts on that medium last time I checked as well. So, guys, thank you so much for listening in, even if it's for 20, 30 minutes. I know that these podcasts go an hour, hour and a half, but they work great for me. I listen to podcasts of this length all the time when I'm in my car traveling. The nice thing is you just pick up where you left off and never have to worry about long, huge commercial breaks. So with that, thank you so much, and we're going to call this podcast done.